Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Route, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between food producers and food consumers. My calendar says that it is Monday. That means that we check in with White Pine County's favorite county commissioner, Hank Vogler.
Good morning. Or should I say goodbye, Mike?
I don't know. Why are you speaking Australian?
Well, you do know that we're trying to put that petition together to get the federal trade commissioners together and see why the imbalance of trade with Australia and New Zealand and other countries. And Tom came over here to beat me up all the way from Australia to tell me, you know, take a hike.
You want to properly introduce Tom?
Tom Ashby from, do you consider Adelaide your main base? Or
Adelaide's a capital city, yeah.
Yeah, Adelaide, South Australia. Or is it New South Wales?
No, West South Australia.
South Australia.
Trent, you've been over there to Adelaide. You did a good talk there. And that would be 10 years ago, wouldn't it?
That, Tom, was the second time. First time I was in Bendigo, and then the second time, I think it was 2015.
Yeah. Okay.
Might have been 14.
Yeah, the LAMEX conference is coming back to Adelaide in August this year. So we're having a three-day conference again in Adelaide. Haven't got a ticket yet, have you?
Is that Hank and I's invitation to come back to Adelaide?
It is if you're ready to go, yeah.
Yeah, we're ready. Is that Hereford Shop, that restaurant downtown, Hereford Bistro, is that what it was called?
Yeah.
Is it still,
it's still there?
Yeah. It's still, oh, yeah, that sounds good. Well, yeah. Tom, we hear a lot of horror stories about Australia, particularly in livestock prices, because of what's been going on with live exports, which, by the way, was the very first concern I went to when I was with the lot feeders in Toowoomba back in 2011, the beef cattle guys, the impact of live exports and particularly Indonesia. But Hank and I have been talking about you quite a bit. It sounds ruthless. What's the current status?
Yeah, look, I went to a live export meeting just last week before I came over here, and we had about 140 growers turn up at that meeting, and this was on the live sheep trade out of Perth in Western Australia, and we're sending about between 500 and 700,000 sheep across to Saudi Arabia every year. The Australian government want to shut it down. The green vote, I guess you call it in Australia, is a minority party, and they seem to have a lot of voice, and they just want to shut live export down. They're saying it's pretty cruel on the animals, and we lose less sheep on those boats than what we do on farm every year. So the sheep are well looked after, and they get there, and on the other end of it, they're feeding a lot of people that want the live animal. They don't want chilled meat. They don't have facilities to handle chilled meat. So it's a pretty good market for Australia. And if it shuts down, it's going to devastate the sheep industry even further to where it is now.
So it is still working. I mean, it's not completely shut down.
No, we're still going with sheep at the moment, and we'll be until the government is saying they're going to phase it out by 2026.
Okay.
Now, you have to realize that for the audience's benefit, they're very polite in Australia. They call them greenies, where here we used to call them fern fairies and bunny huggers, and now they've been reduced to frog lickers. So, and for those of you who don't know, the golden frog in Colorado is about to be put on the endangered species list some mechanism it had, probably self-defense, when an animal tried to consume it, it secreted these oils out of its skin, and it caused the animal that was trying to eat them to hallucinate and therefore let go of them. So somebody figured that out, that would be fun, and they're losing the golden frogs of Colorado due to the folks hallucinating by licking frogs, which is something kind of shows the regular mentality of that group.
To Tom's defense, not only does he have an environmental faction to deal with, the Green Party is actually a formidable party, even though, as you said, Tom, it's a minority. But it has a seat, it has a place in Parliament, and it's not just some notion that the frog lickers want to be a part of. It's an actual political party.
It is, yeah. And they do have a strong say in the Labor government that's running the country at the moment. On the other hand, if the Liberal government got in, live export would stay open. That's their policy. They can see that, if live export did shut down for the sheep, the impact of truck drivers, grain producers for feedlots, sheep producers, shearers, the impact of the loss of jobs would be devastating across Western Australia, and particularly, and I think the sheep industry in Western Australia would probably diminish by about 30% straight away. And that has an impact on the rest of the states in Australia, because a lot of those Western Australian sheep that were going on the boats would then be sent east to be slaughtered or sent east for breeding or whatever it is. Yes.
Would they go more to China then?
China are handling more chilled meat, so yeah, that's an option. But we don't have enough abattoirs or meatworks to actually handle those extra sheep yet. So we've got to build another plant to handle the slaughter of all those sheep.
So,
and the government don't realize.
Tom, you're going to have to explain to me how it is that families around the world try to accumulate enough money by working 50 weeks a year so that they can spend 2 weeks to pay to go onto a luxury cruise liner. And that is somehow a vacation. But yet if we put sheep on a luxury cruise liner and send them to Saudi Arabia, we've somehow harmed them. Now, how does that make sense?
It makes no sense at all, Trent. And this is why we just cannot understand as farmers or food producers. We're helping another part of the world actually get some protein the way they want it, and the way they can handle it easily, because they don't have the facilities to do the same as Indonesia to do. They want hot meat, not cold meat. But the boats, like the sheep on the boats, are looked after very well. They actually just recently there was one live export boat that got right across 13 days on the water, got right across to the Middle East there, and was turned around by the Australian government because they were scared the pirates in the Middle East might take over the boat. So they turned it around and spent 13 more days getting it home back to Australia and unloaded the sheep. While those sheep were on that boat for 26 days, they actually put on weight. They didn't lose weight. So that proved that they're well looked after on the boats.
There you go, Tom, trying to confuse what they want the agenda to be with reality.
Yeah,
they probably gained more weight because they had no stress whatsoever. Everything was right there. They didn't have to worry about a dingo or anything else. It was all right there.
No, that's exactly right. They were enjoying the boat ride. Yeah.
If I remember correctly, not only did it go 13 days one way, 13 days the other way, they detained it for several days before it even turned around and headed back.
That's right. And then they also detained it when it got back to Freeman.
Yeah. Well, I am certainly glad you've made your way from Australia to White Pine County, Nevada, because Hank's been trying to replicate these sheep that you grow in South Australia. And I'm glad you're there to shepherd him in getting it done right. But at this moment, we're going to take a break. And we'll be back with more Tom Ashby, Hank Vogler, both of those in North Spring Valley, Nevada. I'm in Nebraska. We're back with more Roll Route after this. Let's talk about Tender Beef. Certified Piedmontese creates the opportunity for you, the consumer, to be rewarded every single time for taste and particular tenderness. Here's the best part. 100%, I mean 100% of the beef that you consume from Certified Piedmontese comes from cattlemen in the Great Plains of America. With all of the discussion today about imported beef, here's what you can know. You can eat Great Plains beef. Some in Nebraska, some in Iowa, Missouri, but mostly the Dakotas, Colorado, Nebraska, Kansas. More details and the best news I'm going to bring to you at all. You do not need to go to the store. We will deliver the tender beef to your door. Details and you place your order or check out all of the other protein options at cpbeef.com. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Luce alongside Hank Vogler, Tom Ashby. Your address is not Adelaide, though, Tom. I remember Hank going out there. It was maybe an hour away from Adelaide.
No, we're actually 2 hours north of Adelaide. We're sort of 30 miles north of the Clare Valley. Very, very good wine region there in South Australia.
When we went out there, I was scared to death. I've never been in an automobile and so scared in my life. Because I was on the wrong side of the car, and every time we'd go around the corner, there'd be a car coming. I knew we were going to have a head on. I don't know. It takes a minute to get used to it, and I'm sure Thomas, he's got his wife Sarah with him. She's a very attractive lady, and I'm sure they're having the same issues. And probably why they came to Nevada is the roads are fairly straight.
Did you fly into Salt Lake City, Tom?
We went to San Francisco. I went to a small sheep ranch down at San Gregorio, and then caught a bus out to Reno, then hired a car from Reno.
Oh,
went out to the rough. Yeah,
you got to see good Nevada then.
Yeah. We've driven right across Nevada and really loved it. And the roads here and the country really is not too dissimilar to our pastoral country in South Australia, right, when we head north toward Broken Hill. Very similar country.
So, Tom, one thing you need to get accomplished before you leave, need more sheep company, White Pine County, Nevada, and that is that Hank still thinks he has to employ H2A sheep herders to go out and tend to these sheep. He needs the Australian model of let the sheep provide for him instead of the employees working for him. Are you going to fix that?
Well, the only way we do it is motorbikes and dogs. It's not too different, except that we got more fences, I suppose.
I took him out and showed him the Dunies that will be having their first lamb this year that are about as close to purebred Dunies as I have. And I promise you that without a herder, we'd be out of the sheep business pretty quick, because you cannot have predator control. Issues are just horrific. But the other day we had that tremendous windstorm and snowstorm, and it took us 6 days to find them all. they went in every direction, into the timber and into the canyons, into the draws to get out of that storm. They saved their lives, but nonetheless, it was pretty traumatic. But Christian and Jaime got all back together, and they're pretty pumped about that.
Did you read the article from the Cowboy State Daily I sent you about Lucy Morrison Moore?
Yes, quite a tough old bird now, I'll tell you.
Oh, man. But what jumped out at me, we talk about how the weather is so variable, and we've never seen weather like this. And yet her and her husband left, I believe it was Idaho, and went to Wyoming with 2,000 sheep. Now, of course, this was 1888, 1889, that bad winter. But they ended up with 200. They lost almost all 90% of their sheep.
Yeah.
No, we've had it. In fact, one of the biggest pushes for the sheep industry in the West was the bad winters in the 1890s that put the cowboys out. And the late arrivals from Ireland and from the Basque country were able to get together permits and started intruding on the same federal ground that the cowboys had been using. And of course, they were out tending their flocks while the cowboys were in Washington, D.C., and they put the Bureau of Land Management, or at that time, the land office together, basically to destroy the Western sheep industry. And they did a fine job.
And you left out the part about one day while she was gone, the beef guy, the cattleman, came in there and killed every horse she owns.
Yeah. And my cousins came in.
And you and your cousins.
She took all the kids and put flour on their face and told the tribe or whatever band of Indians it was and said smallpox, and they all took off. So then she could only pull that so many times, and they came back and they said, okay, we'll leave you alone. You're a smart woman. She knew how to survive. By golly.
So, Tom,
and innovation. Oh, she loved innovation. She bought a car and bought a truck.
Well, I was most enamored with, as we're talking about a young family. Well, he was 44. She was 15 when they got married. But anyway, he became an Idaho state legislator. But the amount of travel they did pre-car was just mind-boggling to me.
Trains, I guess. The train would have come through parts of Wyoming, it would, you know, the Central Pacific or whatever it's called at the time. So,
Tom, the one thing I wanted to ask you about is that I do keep track of Australia just because I have so many dear friends there with my five trips to Australia in 5 years. But when I first came in 2011 to Toowoomba, as I mentioned before, the pork industry, piggeries, were not that big of a deal, and pork consumption wasn't that big. But if I look at what's happened in the past 10 years from a livestock and a per capita consumption of a meat, the biggest change is pork. People in Australia now eating more pork than lamb. How did you let this happen, Tom?
I don't know. They seem to like bacon over there, but I think the pork industry got big because of the exports back into China again. That's where it all springboarded off of. Right. And probably lamb at the time got too expensive. I really think lamb. Don't get me wrong. Everyone still eats lamb in Australia. It's a go-to meat. There's no doubt about that. But the pork industry did get big on us, and has, and it's all on the strength of exports to China, really.
Mm-hmm. And by the by, Mr. Luce, we're forming an international coalition that there will be no more Easter hams. Easter is early this year, so we're going to have an early spring. But Christ was Jewish. He didn't eat pork. When the religion of Christianity started with Jesus, and now we have an Easter ham, you got to be kidding me. That's nuts. It's done. We're gonna stop. And no more Christmas hams either, by gosh.
In honor of you two guys, I will eat a leg of lamb on Easter Sunday. Trust me. But we're in the second half, and we got a minute and a half in this segment, guys. We really need to expand upon something Tom said, because it truly is my greatest concern. We see now lamb prices just skyrocketing in the U.S. retail level. I mean, I have people telling me all the time, I want to buy some lamb chops, but they're $25 a pound. We see that beef is parallel to that. And we know that the inventory of beef is not there. And we as cattlemen are enjoying some prices, which I'll use a Hank term, finally maybe at parity. But the truth of the matter is that if you look at the concept of what pork and chicken cost compared to beef and lamb, guys, we're in a terrible position from a beef and lamb standpoint.
Well, you still are. I just don't think it's going to disappear from the menu, but we have got to do what we've got to have. Beef McNuggets, we got to have lamb McNuggets, we've got to have a variety of meats, because the housewife, you know what the old adage is, if you want to hide something from a modern day housewife,
put it in the oven,
she'll end up there.
But Hank, when I started doing media 24 years ago, that was the sentiment. We've got to make beef more convenient to eat. We've made zero strides in that regard.
Well, you see a little bit of it in the market now. But yeah, even fish, even mussels, all those kind of things are being packaged in ready-to-eat situations. So
that's exactly why you should eat meat 3 times a day. The protein will build your muscles so that you can be big and strong like Tom and Hank one day. We'll be back with the second half. Roll out after this. Speaking of staying big and strong, there are other components of doing that, eating meat and beef and lamb. I support 100% pork and, you know, chicken too. But nitric oxide is an absolute essential nutrient of healthy living. NO2U.com, NO, and nitric oxide, number 2, letter U.com. You go to the website, you can read. Nathan Bryant wrote a book on functional nitric oxide. The scientific publications are endless. Get more details about why scientifically you should be taking nitric oxide as a supplement. NO2U.com. NO, number 2, letter U.com. Again, on the website, he has a tremendous amount of videos and information that you're going to want to see about cardiovascular and human health. NO2U.com. Welcome back. It's Trent Roll Route. Hank Vogler checking in. He's got a house guest, Tom Ashby, joining us from South Australia. He's at Hank's, not joining us virtually. Tom, before we get lost in the weeds talking about something else, are you familiar with the new movie that was just released in Australia by Lila McDougall called Just a Farmer?
No, I'm not. No. Okay. Missed that one.
It deals with farmer suicide in Australia, the economic pressures that the farmer is facing, and it's very well done. Hopefully when you get back, you can catch a viewing of that, Just a Farmer.
I'll check that out for sure, Trent. Yeah.
Your most prominent Australian actor who's known in the U.S., as Longmire, Sheriff Longmire, Robert Taylor, is in it, and just very well done, and you're going to appreciate what Lila's done for everybody there. So I just wanted to know if you'd heard about it.
No, I hadn't seen that, but I did watch on the plane coming over. I just started watching a mini-series filmed here in America somewhere about the sheep industry and the cattle industry, just what you were talking about before the break. And it's got Kevin Costner in it as the chief cowboy, basically, and an Irish actor as the sheep farmer.
Even, now, I don't know whether you've seen even it. Australians have been consumed by Yellowstone, Hank. It's a disease.
Yellowstone, go ahead, Tom. It's another
I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
Yeah, but anyway, it was great to see that, and it was just what you were talking about, the sheep industry in the 1880s moving in against the cattle farmers, and they had quite a few.
Well, and one of the biggest mistakes that was ever made, because sheep and cattle don't eat the same things, and they balanced the range a lot more than they wanted to, you know, tell them that it would. And now Nevada, they converted the sheep ranges into cow ranges at the same ratio, and it never should have done that because they didn't consume the same feed. Yeah. So then they started cutting the cowboys, which caused a war with the government. And rather than the government saying, you know, we made a mistake, we should in certain areas favor the sheep guys, then they came along with the water truck and they hauled the water out, and the cowboys no different to sheep herders. You know, the old Irishman, when they'd find him on a meadow somewhere, he'd always say, Can you tell me where I'm at? I'm lost. But they'd always be lost on good feed. Well, the guy that had the water truck set the water troughs out right by the best consumable feed by the cows. And so they hammered that and the black sage and other product. So, yeah, but nobody has ever relented and say, you know, maybe we should do something different. But so it's about like the clock. We got to change the clock twice a year to see how stupid we are.
Tom, Australia hasn't done that yet this year, Hank. We are the leaders.
You haven't changed your clocks, Tom?
Oh, yeah. No, we've had our daylight saving. Yeah, we're about to change it back at Easter time.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
See there.
Back to normal time.
It's a conspiracy worldwide.
Well, you left out of your little dissertation the ever-growing horse population, Hank.
Oh, boy. Well, and of course, Australia has their issues. You have camels also.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
And the interesting thing is, until the sheep industry and the livestock industry came to Australia, the number of kangaroos was pretty limited. And then with taking care of the predators, they also exploded in population. So yeah, I did my part. I used to have a pair of boots made out of kangaroo hide.
35 million kangaroos in Australia, the same exact number of deer we have in the United States. Yeah, we have a deer hunting season where Hank and I can go out hunting and you have government shooters take care of yours. That's a problem, Tom.
Yeah, that is a problem. And the kangaroos, the government shooters aren't keeping up. I think that population's getting bigger all the time. And it's a little bit seasonal. Like the kangaroos will breed when it's a good season. They'll breed quick. Get a couple of droughts and the numbers do drop off. Huh. Yeah. But they in droughts, when it's, you know, in the middle of Australia and in the really harsh country, when it's severe droughts, the kangaroos will just keep coming south. Or they'll head east. They'll head to the coastlines where the feed is. Yeah. So that's when we notice the big population.
And I suppose our idea of what a kangaroo can do, they hop over a fence like it wasn't even there.
They clear the top part of the fence. Yeah. No worries at all. Yeah.
Tom,
but yeah, we have a big camel population in Central Australia.
I just wanted to add, Tom.
And we actually have more camels.
Go ahead with camels, Tom.
Oh, sorry. So we have a bigger population of camels in Australia now than the Middle East does. So they're a problem also.
Are they so cranky that you can't capture them and sell them to Saudi Arabia?
And no, they don't want them back.
Oh,
they got enough of their own. But they do. They are starting to slaughter camels for camel meat and boxing the meat and sending that, but not in big numbers.
But they also camel hair coats and things like that.
Yeah, there's a use for them, but
not letting them run wild.
No, that's right. Yeah. Without the camel, inland Australia wouldn't have got opened up. I mean, they carted everything inland.
They tried them here in Nevada, and it didn't work very well. I don't think there's any of them left.
Nah.
So, anyhow.
I was just going to add, when Brent, Tom was talking about the growth, the population of camels in Australia currently reported at 37 million, so it's growing.
It's growing, yeah. And they're working our dog fence, a dingo fence, which cuts down through southern Queensland, right across New South Wales, into South Australia and out to the Nullarbor Plain. And the camels work that fence all the time because they're on the other side of the fence.
Well,
it over in places.
I've heard about the dingo fence more than once. Now, the advantage of that, our coyotes will dig under a fence as fast as they can, some of them will even climb over the top of it.
Yeah.
So it just gives the trappers a better opportunity to catch up with them.
That's right. Yeah. The dingo fence does work in Australia.
It does.
And it's well maintained. Uh-huh. If the dingo fence is going through your land, you have to make sure that your section of the fences maintained, but you get government funding to actually help maintain it. But yeah, while it's going through your land, you maintain it. Yeah,
I see.
But it works, and it keeps the majority of them on the right side, and it keeps the sheep farmers going. And you know, without that fence, yeah, it would devastate our sheep industry.
We can bring you some wolves. We're getting wolves. That's
pretty right for them.
Grizzly bears. Yeah.
Frank, Hank wants to send you some.
Bill Gates is having.
Yeah, we're pretty good for frogs. We got the cane toad, and he's making a mess in North Queensland. He's heading across to the Northern Territory now, and so he's spreading out as well. Yeah, like most things, you bring in one species to take another out, and then they just breed up and take over. Yeah.
Well, now what? These frogs, what are they? The great big frogs, or they eat cane, or
yeah, they're a big frog, and they're poisonous. Yeah, they've taken out a lot of native species of animals.
Oh, small really? Ones.
Yeah, huh. yeah, they're a pest. The cane toad. Huh. They're pretty good fun with a golf stick.
For all you listeners out there, we're gonna take a break. Little editing.
Tom, I got to ask you about this because you mentioned government funding. It's something that's just become a burr in our side. Our saddle's got so much government spending. Our debt, it cannot be repaid by three generations of our kids. What is the current spending? Has that accelerated much since I was there? And are you continually getting more government debt, which is going to subsidies?
Yeah, we are. I mean, let's just take the wool industry. So Australian Wool Innovation is our body. We have Meat Livestock Australia looking after the meat industry. We have Australian Wool Innovation looking after the wool industry. They both get a certain amount of government funding into those bodies. And I think it's about 12.5% of government funding goes into Australian Wool Innovation. So they get a nice little bit of money. The rest of it's all grower levies that goes in there for research and innovation.
But it's not a direct subsidy on the wool. It goes to research. It
goes to research and innovation. Yeah. Yeah. And also marketing of our wool, which Australian Wool Innovation is probably the only real organisation in the world that actually promotes wool in other countries.
Are you getting to the point where you have more hair sheep and more coarse breeds that are strictly meat sheep more than wool, or is
no,
sticking with the fine wools?
The merino is still the dominant animal in the sheep industry in Australia, and probably always will be. We still have a pretty good relationship with China, and that's where most of, you know, the majority of our 80% of our wool is produced and spun and washed up there in China and made into garments. So
80% of all the fiber.
80% of all the Australian wool is
it's worldwide. 80% of all the fiber in the wool goes to China.
Yeah.
So
and then probably 60% of that wool actually stays in China. They actually consume that wool inside China. It doesn't go to other countries.
And, of course, our saving grace is the fact that if we ever get into a war with China, we'll have to go naked. And if that won't scare them, nothing will.
Hank Vogler, Tom Ashby, Trent Luce, Roll Route. We've got one segment left. We'll be back with that after this. Yeah, let's take a moment and talk about Simpson Farm Enterprises, High Plains Apache, partnering up to get you the latest in innovation reliability when it comes to pest control. You know, Tom talks about pest in Australia. Our pest here in the food business are weeds and insects. And you want to maintain the best control you can with the least amount of input from a financial standpoint, from an overall wear and tear standpoint, and it just makes sense. Less chemical, more action. And then when you have an issue, because all mechanical things have an issue,
You need somebody that you can count on for service. Simpson Farm Enterprises does as good as anybody you'll ever do business with, if not the best. SimpsonFarm.com. Apache Sprayer Technology, Simpson Farm Service, you got a winning team. SimpsonFarm.com or HighPlainsApache.com if you're in the Northern Great Plains.
Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Lewis alongside Tom Ashby joining us from White Pine County, Nevada, sitting across the table from Hank Bogler. There was something I thought about in that regard that completely lost me, but
Trent, can I tell you about some new innovation that we're looking at?
Well, we'd love
this
that.
This is to do with the fiber itself. I've been working with a group of researchers at the Adelaide University, and actually haven't told Hank about this yesterday in our travels, but we're working on a handheld device that will give you an instant micron in real time on the sheep's back. So it's an EID tag reader, and then we're actually looking at just taking a sample of wool on the sheep's back while it's in the race, and we can get a read on that wool for micron standard deviation, comfort factor, and possibly colour and length of staple.
Wow!
So it's going to be a game changer in the wool industry if we can nail it and get it right. We've got about 8 prototypes out in the field that we're testing now, and we've got to get it sort of around about 98% accurate against a laser scan machine, which does all our testing now, or the Octa machine. But the Octa machine probably is not recognised by the Australian Wool Testing Authority. It's more the laser scan we have to... get it up against.
When the wool gets short on the older ewes and their teeth are going bad here, we mark them out, but we're not going. I mean, you can kind of tell if they've got really coarse wool, but it's not very scientific.
No.
So progress you'd make would be just tremendous.
Yeah. The other thing is in the shearing shed, when you're shearing that fleece off, you can put it on the table and test it there and then get a read on micron of that fleece, and then put it in the 17 micron bin or the 18 micron bin, and you've got lines of wool that you know that you're selling, and it's so much better for the grower when he's selling because he knows what he's actually selling.
Well, for all the 3 sheep herders that are still left in the West, when I went to Tom's shearing shed, dumber than a box of rocks on my part, he had all these little bins. And I thought, well, that must be where the shears hang their clothes. They absolutely class their wool different than we do. We pull the bellies out, skirt the fleece, and if it's a short fleece, throw it in a pile or whatever. But it's very limited compared to what they do. But something like this, the advancements that you could make as far as fiber, it'd be just tremendous.
So, yeah, that's right. I think... you know, when we actually get it fully accurate and going properly, and it's a machine that's everyone can use, every farmer should own one.
Yeah. Well, Yoakum McCall in Colorado quit working, so we have been having to send our samples to an outfit in New Zealand.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah. And so by the time the wool buyer shows up, the wife's already knitted everything into a pair of socks.
Tom,
I think it will be a game changer.
My initial thought is that from a genetic standpoint, you will be able to evaluate these bucks and even the maternal side if you wanted to immediately and make more genetic advancement. But then I wondered, how much more advancement can you make in fine quality wool? Are you about to accomplish the threshold? Because you can only get it so fine.
We're not probably looking to get it, much finer than where we are. There are some growers in Australia that are pushing, down to 13 micron, but that's only, very minority.
And those guys in New Zealand that tried that, Barney Cornish, he called me and he said, boy, don't ever do that.
No.
Yeah. It brings up everything else. It's infertile, just you name it.
It's more about actually tightening your outliers of your flock up, and like you said, genetically you can make a lot of gains, so you can, if you're aiming for that 18.5 micron, you can take away all the outliers down at 14 micron and all the outliers at 23 or 22 micron. You can tighten your whole wool flock up, and then you know what you're producing, and you know what you're actually selling into a market. And I think that's going to help both the grower and the buyer that's actually buying that wool.
It's huge. Still a crapshoot, even though they court and everything.
How far away is this technology, Tom? I think, well, we've been working on it a fair while, and it's all about the algorithms and the camera in the head of the device and the accuracies. That's where we're sort of having a little bit of trouble with the greasy fiber, because the laser scan actually washes the fiber in an alcohol solution to get a true reading. We're trying to do that without washing it. We're trying to get the accuracy on the greasy wool. So we think by the end of this year, we're nearly going to have enough accuracy to actually get it onto the market as a commercial product. And I know that it'll be like having a set of weigh scales on your farm. You'll just, farmers that have fiber on their sheep will want one of these devices.
Well, and two, the other thing that I see is the Australians, unlike some of the people in the United States, were going to the fine wools, and they didn't pay any attention to staple length and size of the sheep. So you wound up with these 100-pound ewes that had inch and a half staple on them, where the Australians, there's more area raising wool to put in the sack. And then so you have a better carcass at the end of the day also. So it becomes a multi-purpose breeding animal. It's not just wool or meat. It's both. And that's the thing that intrigued me when I went down there, is that the Australian carcasses were beautiful, and they were not these little punched up, short bench-legged things. They were beautiful animals.
Yeah, I mean, the meat side of our industry is big in the merino industry, and we've, particularly in South Australia, we've really concentrated on the carcass and getting the pin wrinkles out of the skin, so we made it easier for the shearers to shear the animal. It's a bigger carcass for the shearers to lift and drag.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, you guys haven't given any value to the Sams. I got to tell you, Tom, when I was a part of that, Hank got in on some of the tasting, but I think he was with you actually. And then he got back when I was judging the tasting of that lamb, and I went with the South African Merinos. They were the best.
So Merino actually comes up pretty good on taste. It doesn't matter if it's a South African meat Merino or the Australian Merino or the Dooney Merino. They all come up pretty good on taste, probably better than a Suffolk or any of your actual meat breeds, really, because the Merino is he marbles probably a little better in his muscle.
The thing that I, and please, if there's a breeder out there listening to this, don't be upset. I thought the Sams were just a little too large for this country. It'd be about like bringing in Simmental and Kianina cows. The desert would eat them like popcorn.
That's exactly right, Hank. And the Sam Merino, the South African meat Merino, is almost non-existent in Australia. They've sort of almost gone by the wayside.
So interesting.
They're not pop. There's very few breeders left in them, and for that reason, they actually got them too big, and their fiber got too strong, and so they became an animal that no one really wanted, and the shearers didn't want to shear them because they're too big.
Well, Tom, if you look at a 1956 4-H kid, 12 years old, taking his steer to the 4-H fair. And he's as tall as a steer, and now they look like little kids holding elephants. Yeah. So we may have fewer cows, but we have produced a larger animal.
That's right.
And they don't always work everywhere. They may work in some countries and others, but two or three people have tried it here over the years and not done very well. And it's back to the old standard Herefords and Angus, and even further south, they put a little ear on them from the Brahmas.
And what about the short horn? Is he still there as well? Because
boy, they're
that's what we're breeding in Australia.
Really, they're just evaporating. You, I don't know hardly anybody that's in the short horn business. Do you
I do know two people who were in the short horn business selling commercial bulls. Most of the people in the short horn business, quite honestly, are just doing show animals, and that's a different world, Tom. I'm gonna make the assumption, Tom, that there's plenty of people listening that may or may not know about sheep, but if the ones who do not are wondering what you're talking about with the Doonies, before we run out of time here, I want you to explain what you've been doing with those.
With the Doonies, you said?
Correct. Yeah.
So the Doonie Merino is interesting also. And I know Hank's well into the Doonie breeding here, but again, like the South African Meat Merino, the Doonie has lost a lot of favour in Australia. And it's all on the strength that the Merino, or the Australian Merino, is actually a better product. The Australian Merino is cutting a little bit more wool. The nourishment or lanolin in the wool is better, handles the harsher conditions a little better, closes the sand and the dust that we get out in the desert out there. The wool fibre handles better on the Merino than it does on the Doonie. And the Merino carcass now is equal to the Doonie. So, just like the South African Meat Merino, the Doonie is losing favour and the Australian Merino is the winner, and particularly the South Australian Merino. Mm. A lot of people from other states coming to South Australia now because we've been the leader in building that really good carcass and maintaining our fleece weight and maintaining that high-quality wool. So South Australia has really been the winner, or the stud farms in South Australia with their genetics have been the winner in all that, all the leaders in that, I guess. Yeah.
Tom, I think that Hank would echo my sentiments, and I say that if it were not for you, the Australian Merino breeders, the wool industry would be a thing of the past, but you guys have kept that forefront. We have very few people outside of those from Colorado West that are focusing on wool at all, Hank being one of those. But I just want to say on behalf of the fiber world, thank you for continuing to be a part of that. Hank, we got 30 seconds.
We just need a level playing field, and I think that everybody can prosper. That's our biggest problem, and it's spelled government.
We have successfully journeyed down the path with only one censorship of the government about 5 minutes ago. We have successfully journeyed down the path connecting food producers to food consumers around the world, including down under. My thanks to Tom Ashby, Hank Wilgram, Trent Luce, all three of us reminding you that all roads do lead to a roll route.
Don't forget the Free Soil Coalition meeting tonight at the York High School. If you can't make York High School, go to my Rumble page. My Rumble page will be streaming it live from 7 to 9. Free Soil Coalition, about property rights.